Bolchi.
Recorded live.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, and this, of course, is Yahweh's Covenant People. And before I actually get back into the subject of today's show, which is going to be the Informed Consensus Part 2, how to properly define the word Jew. And before I actually go into this, let me just quickly give the nuts and bolts of how to define the word Jew. There is no such thing as a Jewish Israelite. That's pure fiction. It's a 2,000-year-old fiction. And in this series of articles here, Informed Consensus and Informed Consensus Revisited, which are on my website, anglo-saxonisrael.com, and I'll put the link into the chat room so you all can read along. And we'll be starting with the section entitled Myth of Jewish Shemitic Heritage. But I just wanted to, one quick announcement. The reason I was in downtown Chicago today was because I was doing a live interview with Press TV, which is Iran's state television station. And so I had to get dressed up in a nice-looking suit and tie and jacket and everything like that. But it was cold, man. I had to wear an overcoat. It was so cold downtown. So anyway, I did a half-hour interview. The show went very well. And I should get a copy of it, and I'll post it up on Eurofolk Radio. Basically, they had me there talking about how the Jews have been genociding Palestinians. And so they were very happy with my discussion there. In fact, after the show was over, the producer said, I was magnificent. I was magnificent. Well, that's what, you know, if you're telling the truth eloquently, that's a magnificent thing. So I'm still waiting for them to send me a copy of the half-hour show. And when I get that, I will post it on Eurofolk Radio. And, okay, let me uncheck guest six here. But Pastor Steve, who is going to be one of Eurofolk Radio's show hosts very soon, or if not an actual host, frequent guest. Oh, Celtic Warriors, you are a magnificent pastor. Oh, flattery will get you everywhere. Thank you. So, and Pastor Steve will be a regular guest on one of my shows, or he will have a show of his own. We will see how that goes. Oh, also, let me quickly announce, next Friday, we're going to be doing the show from a campground in Kentucky. We're going to try using a little Wi-Fi device, and it's supposed to pick up or enable Wi-Fi anywhere on planet Earth and maybe even Mars. I'm not sure. But if the thing works in the boonies of South Central Kentucky, then we can do the show. If not, then there'll be dead air next Friday. So we'll see. So if you tune in and there's dead air, you know it's not working. But we're going to give it the old college try. So and then probably our subject is going to be different. It's probably going to be on the Hebrew calendar and Hebrew feast days, because next week is the solar calendar. And that's what we're going to be doing in Kentucky, celebrating the solar calendar from April 1st to 4th. I'll be there from April 1st to 4th. And many of the participants will be there a whole week. Yeah, guest four says, yeah, I could have had a pastrami on rye. Actually, that might have been cheaper, but I don't think it was on the menu. It was not a Jewish deli, guest four. It was Joe's, a Grand Avenue and Rush Street. Man, talk about... talk about dead center downtown Chicago, Grand and Rush. Beautiful area, actually. For, you know, as far as the Medina Temple, it's just a half a block north. That's where they have the circuses. That's the Medina Temple is, oh, the Freemasons that wear fez hats. What the heck are they called? Can't think of his, they're not Freemasons. you don't want to be a Jew. Oh, but just a half a block north of there is P. Pizzeria Uno and Pizzeria Due. Uno's is where the very first deep dish pizza was invented. My wife, that deep dish pizza, that cheese is like 2 inches thick. And when they bring it to your table in the pan, and then they cut it right before your very eyes, and then they dish it out of the pizza, and it's like the waiter or waitress has to go up 5 or 6 feet in the air because the cheese is all stringy. And then they somehow, sometimes they have to take their finger and wrap it around the slice of pizza. But boy, is that good. And really good stuff, really good stuff. But no leavened bread. No leavened bread this weekend. So you got to go with tortillas or what do you call the Greek flatbread? Pita. Things like that. And there's all kinds of recipes for unleavened bread for Feast of Unleavened Bread. Starting with Passover, it's an 8-day feast. So be aware. No unleavened bread during Passover. And so that's from April 1st to 8th. No unleavened bread. Okay, so Pastor Steve called me earlier today about Genesis 25:23. And he said that he had a breakthrough on that verse, saying that not only... Anyway, the verse says that two kinds of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And he says the actual translation is even better directly from the Hebrew. It actually says that two nations shall be divided from one another. So it could be taken to read the way the KJV translates it. It could be taken to read, well, yeah, you will have two sons separated out of thy bowels, right, out of your womb. But no, it's very, the Hebrew is very emphatic that these two nations, Jacob Israel and Esau Edom, will be at enmity. The word there, he says, Shriners, thank you. Thank you, W. Ron, it's Shriners. And, they have the circus there every year. And they actually have a big Medina Shriner Temple right in downtown Chicago. I don't know what it's doing there, but there it is. There's several Freemason buildings downtown, several of them. And so, they're everywhere. And so he says that the word divide here actually implies enmity. It implies enmity so that... It's just very much the same idea as in Genesis 3, 14, and 15 with the enmity declared between Cain and Seth. Okay, so Steve is very emphatic that that's what the verse, that's how it should be implied, that there should be enmity between Esau and Jacob, of course, until, as we understand it, until the judgment day. All right, so those are the announcements. Yes, and there's all kinds of stuff about Esau in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. In fact, Paul's writings on Esau are very good. Paul says that Esau is one who is fit for destruction, a vessel fit for destruction. I also recently found out that 1 Corinthians 10:8 is actually a reference, maybe I should get my Bible out here real quick, is actually a reference to the sin of Balaam, in which Paul cites the sin of Balaam as something that we are not supposed to do. So all of these Paul worshipers, and the next time Pastor Martins and I get together to discuss Paulianity, we will be talking about this particular verse, 1 Corinthians 10:18, I'm almost there, which is actually a reference back to the sin of Balaam. So even Paul references the sin of Balaam, and Peter, 2 Peter references it, Revelation references it, and Jude, all three reference the sin of Balaam and condemn the sin of Balaam. What's the sin of Balaam? Well, it's race mixing, fornication between peoples, between the Israelites and the forbidden nations, such as the Ammonites and the Midianites and the Canaanites and Edomites, etc. So here is what he says in verse 8, 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Let me back up to verse 7. Neither be you idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, and fornication is any kind of sexual sin, but we know that it's race mixing here, because it's between the Israelites and people that were forbidden to have sexual relationships with. So neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. So he's talking about the 23,000 Israelites that were struck dead by Yahweh as a result of the sin of fornicating with the Midianite and Ammonites. So there's at least four references that we have found now that reference the sin of Balaam. This one's indirect, but that's exactly what happened. 23,000 Israelites were struck dead by Yahweh, and another 1,000 were killed by Moses and the judges. So, folks, this is serious business, and Paul confirms it. Don't let anybody tell you that Paul does not teach the law. Paul absolutely does teach the law. It's the Paul worshipers who have totally distorted the teachings of Paul. Okay? So, we'll get into that some more on Sunday this Sunday it's going to be Pastor Alan Campbell. So this Sunday, Pastor Alan Campbell, although we may talk about this subject with him as well, because we've been primarily discussing his work, and so maybe on this Sunday we'll simply discuss Scripture, because he's a two-seed line pastor from Belfast, Ireland. And rats, I just lost the chat room. All right, let me try to get the chat room back. Okay, give me 1 second. There we go. Got it back. All right, so I'm going to pick up informed consensus from the heading, The Myth of Jewish Shemitic Heritage. In defining Jews as an ethnic and cultural group, we must at all times bear in mind that they are not Israel, not Judah, not Jacob, not God's chosen people, not the people of the book, and certainly not the covenant people. As explained in the brief historical sketch above, the actual derivation of the Sephardic Edomite Jews is through the Canaanites of Idumea, who were given the name of Edom, Jacob's brother. Esau's name in Idumea is simply Greek for Edom. Idumea is simply Greek for Edom. So the direct connection, unmistakable. Idumea means Edom. Esau's name was changed to Edom when Esau married into the Hittite Canaanite people. Those people were henceforth called Edomites by our people of the house of Israel and by our people of the house of Judah. The Idumeans were a separate nation of these Canaanite Edomites. Of this, there is absolutely no historical doubt. And since the Pharisees came from this stock of people, any definition of the word Jew must take into account their non-Jacobite or non-Israelite ethnic status. We must call a spade and stop using the word Jew as the Jews have conditioned us to use it. We must start using the word as it accurately describes the reality, history, and the ethnicity of the people that the word designates. The false equation must be exposed, and I have stated very often, well, let the Jews use the word Jew because that's what they call themselves. Let them call themselves whatever they want, but don't call a Judahite or an Israelite a Jew because that's a false equation. Next paragraph. I must state here as well that I believe that the Hittites were the survivors of the short, stocky, hook-nosed, receding, four-headed people of ancient Sumeria, whose origin is unknown. Dr. Wesley Swift has surmised that they came along with the fallen angels. Is there any doubt? The ancient documents of Sumeria refer to these people as the Blackheads because their physical features stood out so prominently from the other peoples of the land. The average Sephardic Jew of today still carries with him these genetic features. As the Bible says, quote, the show of their countenance doth witness against them, unquote. You can see their Jewishness in their faces. Now, this derivation of the Sephardic Jew from Esau Edom still holds true today. But we also have to factor in the Ashkenazi Jews into today's Jewish population. The Ashkenazi are of an entirely non-Shemitic line of descent whose ancestors never set foot in the land of Judea. Being another mixed racial bag, the Ashkenazim Khazar people are composed primarily of Japhethites, Mongolians, and Hittite Edomite stock. As I mentioned, these Hittites date back very, very far. Okay, very, very far, even way back into Sumeria. And Chaldea, and Turkey. And it seems like Turkey was their stomping grounds for a very, very long time. And these are the very Hittites that Rebekah hated so much way back in Genesis 24, 25, and 26, and 27. And she demanded that Jacob not intermarry with these Hittite women, but Edom, of course, did. Okay, so, plus every other racial type that would be found in Eastern Europe and Western Asia. Of course, Mongolian blood includes a large portion of Chinese blood, so that cannot be ignored either. Thus, the only connection between the Sephardic Jews and the Khazar Jews is the fact that the Sephardic Jews migrated up into the land of Khazaria and intermarried with them. Ultimately, the miscegenated people of Khazaria converted to Judaism in the 8th century AD. Thus, all Jews of Eurasian origin are definitely non-Shemitic. Absolutely non-Shemitic. This is a historical fact that has become very well known despite Jewish denials. And they even hired David Duke to deny the denial, right? Pretended the Ashkenazi are Israelites. David Duke actually put out a video saying that. Amazing, absolutely amazing. Is he a Klansman? is he for the white races? Is he for the Jews, helping the Jews to promote their lies? Well, this is where we're at today. Disinformation and shills are all over the place. The Jewish charade as Israel and Judah gets more and more fantastic as more and more facts are revealed about their racial and religious background. The amazing thing is that anybody believes their story considering how patently fraudulent the entire story is. But that is how the con artist operates. He stays in business until the scam is revealed. What makes the scam so rich and so hard to discern is the fact that the con artist has hired a bunch of false priests to dupe and fleece the flock. For a moment, let's go back to the time of Jacob and Esau and find out the real cause of strife between these two brothers who came from the womb, separated into two nations with enmity of Rebekah, Isaac's wife. By the way, Rebekah is my biblical heroine, not the drug, but female hero. If she hadn't overruled Isaac and insisted that Jacob get the blessing instead of Esau, we'd all be Jews today. Frightening thought, isn't it? Although Esau was the firstborn and therefore had the right of primogeniture, which is a biblical tradition, I think it's actually exclusive to the Israelites. I'm not aware that any other people besides the Israelites had this, although it's possible that other Adamic peoples had it. Excuse me. So anyway, although Esau was the firstborn and therefore had right to primogeniture, that is the right of inheritance of the eldest son, Esau rejected his primogeniture by virtue of marrying outside of his race. outside of his race. Bible clearly says this. Yet no Jew or Judeo-Christian will ever make mention of this fact. Now, every Orthodox commentary, Christian or Jewish, on the dispute between Esau and Jacob will tell you that Jacob was the bad guy, having tricked his brother Esau out of the right of inheritance. But none of these commentaries will ever talk about the fact that the real reason that Esau lost the right of inheritance is the fact that he was a race mixer. These Bible commentators will wax profound about Jacob's craftiness in impersonating his brother in order to receive Isaac's blessing. But the blessing and the inheritance are two separate issues. The fact is that the impersonation was Rebekah's idea, not Jacob's. I think he was only, I can't say how old he was. I think the book of Jasher says he was like 13 or 14. I'm not sure. But, of course, and they were born on the same day, so they were virtually the same age. But, you expect a teenage boy to disobey his mother? So she even says, the punishment be upon me, my son, Jacob. That's what Rebekah said. Don't you worry about it. I accept full responsibility. Yet none of these theologians ever mention this. That it was Rebekah who insisted that her son Jacob do this. The fact is, the impersonation was Rebekah's idea, not Jacob's, so the attempt by these theologians to smear Jacob is transparent once you read the passage for yourself. Genesis 25 tells us of the encounter between Jacob and Esau, where Esau sells his birthright for a bowl of lentil soup. Lentil soup. That must have been some really good soup. Jewish tradition actually states that Esau had just come back from a raid. And this is also in the book of Jasher, I believe. Esau was a highwayman, a robber. And that raid had gone bad, and he was exhausted and out of breath from having been pursued by his intended victims. And I think the intended victim, according to Jasher, was actually Nimrod. And he actually cut off Nimrod's head. And then he realized, hey, there's a bunch of soldiers around here. I better hightail it out of here. And so he cut his way through the woods and lost his pursuers, and then found Jacob mixing this pot of lentil soup. And so this is why Esau was in such a hurry. He was afraid that Nimrod's troops were still pursuing him, and then he had to go, right? Okay, yeah, I'm hungry, but I got to go real soon. Thank you. Bye. Oh, by the way, I'm selling you my birthright. Thank you, said Jacob. This would explain Esau's haste in selling his birthright. This is a Talmudic, not biblical teaching about Esau, but it's also in Jasher. Be that as it may, the Bible records the fact that Jacob made the offer and Esau accepted it. That's a done deal, folks. Contract. It's a contract. In fact, it was written down. It was actually written down. So Jacob had proof that this deal was made. Now here's the billion-dollar question. Would you regard your birthright so lightly as to sell it for a bowl of porridge? Rather than reveal any craftiness on the part of Jacob, the story reveals the unacceptability of Esau, for he cared not at all for his heritage and posterity. He was a vain, selfish man who disregarded his parents, his religion, and his racial heritage. And he even thought to murder his brother Jacob. In this regard, he was very much like Cain. Thank you, Pastor Steve. Genesis 26:7 tells us that Rebekah's skin was noticeably white. Oh no, that's racist. Even mentioning the color of your skin is racist. No, don't do that. The Jews say that's hate speech. And that she was very beautiful, proving that she can't be Jewish. Isaac feared that his non-white neighbors would seek to kill him in order to steal her and do horrible things to her. like the Jews and Arabs are doing to our women today. Genesis 26:34 tells us that Esau married two females of these non-white Hittite daughters of Heth, Judith and Bashemath. Verse 35 tells us of Isaac and Rebekah's attitude toward these two females, quote, which were a grief of mind unto Isaac and Rebekah, unquote. Now, it's usually the daughter who wants to go out with the bad biker, right? the dirty, stinky biker. But in this case, it was the son going out with dirty, stinky Canaanite women, Hittite women. And Rebekah and Isaac did not like them at all. So, this is the reaction of Rebekah. And she said, "What good shall my life do me if Jacob also marries these dirty, stinky, rotten, Hittite women? I will just die if he does that." Do you think it's fair to say that Rebekah was prejudiced against these Hittites? She most certainly was. Since Esau Edom rejected his Israelite heritage, he became an outcast, and his name became a curse because he was a law-breaking race traitor. The biblical race consciousness of the Israelites became immediately apparent to me when I started reading the Bible for myself, instead of letting the whore pastors and pulpit masters do the reading and the interpreting for me. From beginning to end, the Bible is replete with the message of the exclusiveness of Israel and the Adamic white race. There is simply no doubt about this. But the racial message has been painted over the document by deliberately false and misleading language in much the same way as when one painting can be painted over by another, obscuring the masterpiece that is hidden underneath. Yes, and the Bible is a masterpiece, which has been painted over by Judeo-Christianity and by Judaism. Speaking to the people of Israel, Amos 3:2 tells us, quote, You only, you Israel, have I known of all the families of the earth. Which takes us right back to Adam, when Yahweh breathed the breath of life into Adam and Eve and constructed Eve out of his, it says rib, but it really means side. In other words, a complementary person, a woman, obviously required for breeding the race. Hold on, I have to turn my phone off. Be right back. Okay, very good. So, here we go. You only have I known of all the families of the earth. What part of you only don't you understand? No, the Bible is not a multicultural book. It is not. Surely, you cannot imagine that those baby-killing, home-bulldozing, communism-creating genocidal maniacs called Jews are God's chosen people. Don't be ridiculous. If you believe that, then the Bible is a closed book to you. The book of Obadiah explains to us Yahweh's own anger and hatred toward Esau Edom. Not just Edom the man, but Edom the people. I'm not going to quote from it. I want you to read it for yourself as an assignment as soon as you get done reading this essay. No one in churchianity will ever talk about the book of Obadiah or about Edom because study of that book raises the question, who is Edom? Today's Jews and today's Judeo-Christian Pharisees do not want you to understand that the Jewish people originated in Edom, even though the Jewish Encyclopedia admits this as a fact. Quote, Edom is in Jewry. Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 5, page 41. The word Jew as it appears in Scripture. Now, knowing the ethnic difference between Edomites and Israelites, it should be obvious that the word Jew should not be applied to anyone of either the house of Judah or the house of Israel. The Jewish people are simply a completely different breed. I should change that race to breed, because they're a hybrid species. They're not a race. Actually, Yahshua Messiah refers to them as a brood, a breed of vipers. Technically, they are a mixed breed, not a race. Hence, anywhere the word Jew is applied to either of these houses, it is a false assignation, and the Jews know it is false. It is our people who still don't understand. The word Jew, as it appears in the King James Version, comes from two words which have completely different meanings, Judah and Judean. Here, now we're getting to the nitty-gritty. The Hebrew forms of these two words are Yehuda and Yehud. The Greek forms of these two words are Judah and Judeos. It is important to point out, and you notice a similarity between Yehud and, or Judah and Judah in Greek and English. It is important to point out that in the Hebrew form, which conveys the meaning of the times, the word Yehuda meant a Judahite, and the word Yehud meant the nation of Judah or the land of Judah. At no time in Old Testament history did the nation of Judah or any Judahite refer to itself or himself or herself as a Jew or as Jews. This is a modern imputation into the Old Testament. It's a translational error, because you cannot translate a territorial word like Judeos and equate it with a racially pure word like Judah or Israel. Cannot do that. And so this is just a very confusing way of translating the word. So the word comes from Judeos, because that's already a mixed race country. And since the Jews are a mixed-race people, it only makes sense for the word to come from the Greek Judeos, not from the Hebrew Judah. No way. Even though Strong's Concordance defines both words using the word Jew, that is a modern and false assignation which those people never used to apply to themselves. Just like the Indians, American Indians, none of them call themselves Indians. They all call themselves by their tribal names. So we would, you know, we call them Indians, but they themselves never do. So the Judahites of the Old Testament never referred to themselves as Jews. They referred to themselves only as Judah or Yehudi or Yehud, which is totally different from Judeos. So knowing that these words are totally different in meaning, you cannot say that the word Jew derives from both. No, it only derives from Judeos, because that's where the Jews were living. The Edomites were living in Judea at that time. I hope this is clear. It should be obvious, but nevertheless, people who've never heard this before might still be confused. But here, let's go into Strong's Concordance. Number 3061 for Yehud states, quote, contracted from a form corresponding to 3063, which is the word Yehuda, properly Judah. Then they say, hence, Judea. But this is false, because you will not find, there's only one instance of the word Judea in the Old Testament. And that's near the very end, when the nation of Judah was beginning to mix with the Edomites, because that's what the word Judea means. It's a contracted form of Judah and Idumea. That's where we get the term Judea from, this mixture of Judahites and Idumeans. And then it goes on to say Jewry, Judah, Judea. Now, all three of these terms have different meanings. They're not synonymous. Jewry is the Jewish people as we know them. It's the It's a reference historically now here in New Testament times to the mixed breed of Idumeans that were living in Judea at the time. Jewry is a people term. Judah is the unmixed tribe of Judah, and Judea is the nation in which the Judahites and the Edomites lived from 125 BC when King John Hyrcanus first started circumcising Edomites. Let's continue. Everything following the word hence in this definition is interpolation, that is, editorializing, not definition. So the only correct definition of Yehud is Judah. The rest, Judea certainly doesn't apply. Jewry certainly doesn't apply, because Judah is a people. Judea is a country, and that country was not created until it became a mixed multicultural state, ultimately to be led by Herod the Edomite and ruled by Rome as an occupying imperial force. So everything following the word hence in this definition is false. Judah is the only, just as the Hebrew word for mongrel, mamzer, has a one-word definition in Deuteronomy 23:2. Mamzer, and that's all that Strong says. It says mongrel. No embellishment, nothing after the word mongrel, no hence this, therefore that. Judah, Yehud means Judah, period. That's all it means. Either the man Judah or the tribe of Judah. Judea is a completely different idea. And interpolation is an alteration, usually deliberate, of the original meaning of a word. In Old Testament times, the Judahites never referred to themselves as Jews, nor did they ever refer to their nation as Judea. The word Judea only occurs once in the entire Old Testament at Ezra 5:8, and there it is used as a reference to the province of Judea, which at that time was composed of non-Judahites and a racially mixed multitude of Shilohites, Samaritans, and Canaanites. Of course, this was done by the Assyrians, who had moved all those people into the vacated land of Judah. But when Ezra and Nehemiah went back there, they threw all of these Shilohites, Samaritans, and Canaanites out. And also the Sephards, from whom the Sephardic Jews get their name. Those people were imported from Babylon by the Assyrians into Samaria as well. These people had taken over what was the land of Judah when the true Judahites had been taken captive to Babylon. The books of Ezra and Nehemiah leave us no doubt that there was a racial and ethnic house cleaning, ethnic cleansing, if you will, that took place when the true Judahites returned from Babylon. And I have a study on that. The Origin of Talmudism. The Origin of Talmudism, yes, I just quoted it. And that is on AngloSaxonIsrael.com. The link is probably no good because that was posted there before the Jews took my website down in 2012, and I had to post everything back up. So that link is probably no good. But it is there. Just search for Origin of Talmudism. What I am saying is that despite Strong's definition, Judea is not a synonym for Judah. Judah is a racial tribal term. Judea is a territorial term, and just about every linguist of Scripture will tell you this. The etymology of the word Judea begins at a later date, namely around 150 BC. This was the time that the tribe of Judah and the house of Judah became united with the Edomite nation of Idumea. If you combine the words Judah and Idumea and contract them together, you get Judea. Let's put it into the form of an equation. Judah plus Idumea equals Judah. Judea. So we've got two non-identical concepts, Judah and Idumea. And add those two together, you put Judahites and Edomites together in the same country, then you get Judea. All right, so that's the differences between those three words. Right there in that equation, you see what the differences are. Judah does not equal Judea. Idumea does not equal Judea. Only Judah and Idumea in the same country equals Judea. Therefore, the word Judea cannot be applied to Judah as a synonym or as an equal. Cannot be. It can be clearly seen from both Scripture and all available secular histories that Judah and the Judahites were of a particular race, namely the white Adamic Aryan Israelites of the house of Judah. No admixture of another race was conceivable to the Judahites of Judah, period. But Judea is a completely different story, being a nation conceived in adultery, that is, race mixing, as in adulteration of the blood. Judea was substantially different in ethnicity compared with the previous nation known as the Land of Judah, which was exclusively of Judahite extraction. In fact, they fought wars against the Edomites rather than mix with them. Hence, the two words Judah and Judea cannot possibly be synonymous. This is a very, you may think I'm overworking this, but this is, you have to understand, you have to have precise definitions of words. If you don't have precise definitions of words, you get confused and you make statements that aren't true. It is the rabbis of Judaism and their duped and hired servants, the Judeo-Christian pastors, who wish to cloud this issue. But the word Jew treats these two distinct groups as being synonymous. That's why the word Jew is both incongruent and false. This is like trying to find a word that means white blackness or evil goodness or skinny fatness. Once you understand the true meaning of Judah or Judean, this self-contradiction becomes obvious. Equating races with nations is like equating apples and oranges. The rabbis have successfully obscured the difference between apples and oranges by throwing them into the same basket. Excuse me. Now, in New Testament times, the ethnicity of the territory had changed, with a mixed multitude having become acceptable. By whom? Yahweh? No, by the Jew. At least to the Edomite Jew, Herod the Great. Herod was indeed a Judean, but he was most certainly not a Judahite. This one example alone proves the case that Judahites cannot be equated with Judeans. If this fact is true of Herod, it is true for all the other Judeans of Edomite descent, and it is in fact true for all people who call themselves Jews. Unless we use words to accurately convey the racial, ethnic, and religious reality of the times, we are speaking gibberish. Now, you probably heard the show that A.C. Hitchcock and I did about Kalergi, who was, by the way, a kind of part Mongol, part white, part Khazar person whose stated goal in life was to redefine a nation as a non-racial group. So today we see France, a Frenchman, used to be white. An Irishman used to be white. A German used to be white. But now you see blacks moving into France. You see Turks moving into Germany. Now all of a sudden, it's no longer a racial term. It's a territorial term. Is there really such a thing as a Turkish German? No, there isn't. Is there really such a thing as a black Frenchman? No, there isn't. They're all going back to Africa, and the Turks are going back to Turkey, and the Jews are going back to hell, where they came from. This is why you must have precise definitions of words. But most people accept the Jewish cloudiness, fogginess. I mean, the concept that the Jews use is nothing but, it's as clear as mud. You cannot confuse a racial term with a territorial term. You cannot do that. Okay. stated in strict logical terms with respect to Judahites who resided in the territory of Judah, all Judahites were Judeans. Put on your thinking caps. But not all Judeans were Judahites. Okay? So just as not all Americans are Illinoisans, is that the same? But all Illinoisans are Americans. You've got to know the difference. In short, all of those who dwelt in Judea who were of mixed race ancestry were outside the pale of Judah. But they were still Judeans if they were citizens or even just residents of the state. Because under Roman domination, there were all kinds of people living in Judea besides Judahites and Edomites. This is the simple racial, religious, and historical fact that Judahites were totally different from Edomites, and Judahites as a racial group were totally distinct from a multicultural Judean. We have to understand that before the merger of Judah and Idumea, the nation consisted exclusively of the racial category of Judahites of the house of Judah, which included the tribe of Benjamin and the priesthood of the former tribe of Levi. After the merger, this racial, talking about the merger of Edomites and Judahites, after the merger, this racial exclusivity was no longer legally mandated in the nation of Judea, thanks to John Hyrcanus. Such a development would have been impossible in the land of Judah before Hyrcanus. In fact, in America, we had a similar episode, namely the Civil War, which resulted in blacks receiving citizenship. It's actually the 14th Amendment. And even that was done fraudulently. In a nation in which, prior to the war, only whites could be citizens. The 14th Amendment only gave blacks living in the city of Washington, District of Corruption, citizenship. But the Jew lawyers and the Jew politicians and the Judeo-Christian ministers have all been falsely teaching that the 14th Amendment makes us all citizens of D.C. D.C. is not the equivalent to America. You get it? It's not the same. The law only applies to D.C. However, the Jew lawyers apply it to all citizens of all states, and that's a lie. That's just another Jew lie. The civil rights movement of the 60s, again fomented by the Jews, gave blacks equal voting rights. Has our nation been the same since? Has our nation been peaceful ever since? I don't think so. Things have gotten progressively worse for white Christendom in America since this legislative coup by the Jews. Since the Mosaic Law forbids race mixing for all Israel, the merger also changed the religious policy of the land. If the Jews were Israelites, they would obey this law. But they're not Israelites. They're already a mixed multitude. District of Communists. Thank you, Stephen. Instead, the Jews have always been in the forefront of promoting race mixing among whites. They're already race mixed, so they don't have to promote it among themselves. The more whites mix their own blood with that of other races, the more whites tend to die out. This the Jews know very well. It is their international program of racial genocide against us. I call it silent genocide, because so few of us realize that that's what it is. Idumean religion, which consisted of Babylonian paganism, received official sanction in the land of Judea because of Antipater and Herod, both of them Edomites. And the blending of the two religions, Babylonian paganism and the Mosaic Law, led to the emergence of a new priesthood, not Levites. This is why the Pharisees, the originators of the religion called Judaism, began to be more and more powerful in Judea. The Pharisees did not and could not have had any influence as long as the Levites were still in power and the law of Moses was still the law of the land. In fact, there is no historical evidence of any kind that would indicate that the Levitical priesthood of Judah was opposed by any other sect or priesthood until the days of Hyrcanus. Antipater, and Herod. The Levites are mentioned only four times in the whole New Testament. This is adequate witness that their power, influence, and role had been displaced by the Pharisees. Despite what had happened to the Levites, not all of the hereditary offices of Judah had been replaced by Idumeans. The fact is that even during the height of the Pharisees' power, the 24 courses of service at the temple was still a hereditary Judahite commission. However, this was an unpaid job, so no Jews ever bothered to apply. It had no, in other words, it was a it's like a deacon, or I guess that's what they called the volunteers in early Christianity. So it was a volunteer service that you actually had to do some work, you know, keep the temple clean, throw out the riffraff, you know, keep the candles lit, et cetera, make sure there's enough incense, maybe even collect the money from the donations, that sort of thing. It was a job. It was a job, but it was done voluntarily. There wasn't any pay for it. These 24 families were selected by David, and their names were recorded at 1 Chronicles 24. Although they lacked political power in Judean times, the courses were not yet taken over by the mixed-race Jews. They were sometimes priests, but usually they were assistants who helped in the rituals and workers doing the maintenance of the temple grounds, guard duty, etc. In fact, John the Baptist's father was a priest of one of the courses. The categorical imperative of our race, Israel. So now it is time to make a categorical assertion that I feel is incapable of dispute. The religion called Judaism is a hybrid of Babylonian paganism and the Mosaic Law. Again, these are two completely distinct ideas. Babylonian religion and Mosaic religion were just as antagonistic to one another as Cain was to Abel, as Esau was to Jacob. Yet the Jews have blended these two ideas together, and that's what's called Judaism. Let's continue. Judaism is not the original. The Pharisees, by virtue of their usurpation of the priesthood in Judea, falsely claimed to be the originators of and the stewards of the Mosaic Law. By virtue of this usurpation, the Pharisees also claimed to be the people Israel, who are the subject and object of the Old Testament. The claim that the Judaism of the Old Testament, that Judaism is of the Old Testament, is ridiculous on its face. All you have to do is study the Talmud, which is the basis of Judaism, and compare it to the Mosaic Law, and you can see that there is no relationship between the two. It's just the Jews blending two opposites, blending oil and water together, or in this case, pure water and sewage. Technically, the word Jew as applied to the Scriptures does not belong in Scripture. It doesn't even belong in the New Testament. Certainly not in the Old Testament, for in those the proper translation is Judean. But to the extent that a Judean is a multicultural mongrel, and that's what Jews are today, then you don't lose the spirit of the word when you keep that definition in place. But you cannot say a Jew is a Judahite because one is a pure race, the other is a mongrelized race or a mongrelized breed. Okay, certainly not in the Old Testament. It absolutely does not belong in the Old Testament. For in those days, the house of Judah was endeavoring at all times to remain racially and religiously separate from all of the people around it, including Edomites and Sephards. Although there was great difficulty in maintaining this racial purity, the house of Judah was able to do this much better than the house of Israel, which was exiled for its race mixing into the wilderness, where there were no other races to mix with except for literal barbarians with whom we could only be at war. This was Yahweh's solution to our deliberate fornication problem. The 10 northern tribes of Israel began in idolatry, practicing Canaanite rituals. And instead of, the Canaanites, that they should have exterminated but did not were still in the land, so they had to be mixing with them. Note this well. The fact is the word Jew completely obscures the racial and religious differences between the Judahites and the Judeans of Edomite extraction. This is what you have to know. And this is why we in Identity preface the word Jew with Edomites, just to make sure you understand that Jews are Edomites. So we refer to two. We refer to Judah, which is one of the tribes of Israel, and Edomite Jews, or Edomite Judeans. And that if we always preface the word Jew with Edomite, then there's no confusion for people who aren't on board this informed consensus. So if we always preface the word Jew with Edomite, then they can ask a question. What do you mean? What's an Edomite? What? You don't know what an Edomite is? And you claim to know the Bible? The Edomites are the enemies of Israel, don't you know? And they're still here. They're still walking around in shoe leather. They're called Jews. This factor of confusion is very important for the race-mixing Jewish rabbi. If they can get us to buy into their use of language, true Israel is sunk. The word Jew, as used, can and does mean both Judahite and Judean, as they use it. But this is, in fact, absurd. It is like using the word blight, inventing a word blight to mean both black and white. It's like calling both Chicago Major League Baseball teams the Jews, or the Chicago National, or the Chicago baseball team, when there's, in fact, two. Can you see the scoreboard? Final score, the Jews 10, the Jews 9. The score tells you the numbers, but you still have no idea whether the South Side team won or the North Side team won. The rabbis of Judaism thrive on this kind of confusion. They have even convinced their own people that there is no difference between Jews and Judahites, but this is the biggest lie in history. Virtually all Christian scholars have fallen for this abuse of language, not realizing the true ethnic origin of the Jewish people. The rabbis have done a magnificent job of obscuring the racial, ethnic, and religious differences between the Jews and the Judahites. I would say case closed at this point. Case closed. Okay. It looks like guest 15 is using profanity, so I'll ban that person. So this is how the Jews confuse us. And if we could simply stop allowing the Jews to define words for us, if we could simply stop allowing the Jews to tell us what Paul taught, because the Jews are actually on both sides of the Paulianity issue. The Jews are the ones who created this deification of Paul. But that wasn't good enough. They said, okay, let's deify Paul and let's also tear him down. So the Jews are on both sides, as always. They're always on both sides of every single issue, because they want to control both sides. That's why so many Jews become neo-Nazis and actually lead Nazi organizations and infiltrate the Klan and become heads of Klan groups. This is how the Jews always do it. And they're able to do it because they have so much money. The Rothschilds are financing all of these operations. In fact, they've arranged for our government to finance these operations. Folks, that's our teaching for tonight. We got one more show left from part one of the informed consensus. I hope you're getting the point that we should never call a Judahite a Jew. That is verboten by Pastor Eli. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. Tune in tomorrow for a restoration hour and one-to-one. Also, we're going to have Revelation chapter 17 and 18 in store on one-to-one. Thanks for listening. Take care. Yahweh bless.
Call recording has been completed.